Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to Speak Up. Here on CJSF 90.1 FM, we're happy to be here with you this Monday morning. And we got a bunch of stuff lined up for you today. We're going to start off with a report about the new bookstore. And, well, not the bookstore isn't new, but it new is that they're also going to start publishing books down in New West, a report from Danny Nesver Vaderani. We have a conversation with Mayor Ken Sim of Vancouver, not about Vancouver politics. We know there was just, of course, a big by-election down in Vancouver, which brought in two people not from Ken Sim's party in a bit of a sweep. But no, we're going to talk to Ken Sim as part of a series we're doing of talking to regional mayors about what's important to their communities and their cities in the upcoming federal election. We're also going to be talking to Akira about SFU's Skodan Indigenous Film Festival, which is coming up this Friday. So we'll hear all about that. They got two programs, short films and long films, and we're going to hear all about that, which is pretty cool.
I'm going to be speaking about I'm just trying to get the right name. The MP that declined from the race, he already was an MP. Paul Chang, is that how you say it? He a bit of a background on the whole situation, because the controversy was that he said there was a conservative candidate, and he said, "Oh, turn him over to the mainland Chinese police," because supposedly we got a bunch of these Chinese police stations in Canada. Mm-hmm. And sort of my feeling is that if it wasn't for the tariffs, this would have meant the Conservatives would have won, because what happened was that Mark Carney said, "Oh, I accept his apology that I did the wrong thing." He did not ask him to resign. Mm-hmm. He resigned on his own.
Yeah.
And going to be bringing up a little bit about a Fifth Estate article that only happened, a year and a half ago, that was about a synopsis of what they were speaking about, and which wasn't that long ago, actually. So in the context of what's going on, with the Liberals as such.
Great. That's coming up in the last 10 minutes of the show. And, of course, we also have Gardening with Embark. We're talking about growing potatoes this week in your garden. Mm. So as I mentioned earlier, Vancouver had a civic by-election that seems to be quite significant. Two new members were elected to city council, both from progressive parties, in a bit of a landslide win. The third candidate was from the Team party, again, not an ABC party, and Mayor Ken Sims' ABC party was very low down on the ballot. Given that they've dominated the council for the last year and a half, nearly.
But they still have most of the councillors in Vancouver are of the ABC party, though.
It is true.
It isn't going to change what they want to do. What they want to do, they're going to do it until they get elected out or whatever.
Yeah, that's true. I guess where I was going was just that, you know, a sort of electoral snub like this does perhaps make them think about where they're going over the next 2 years until the next election.
Well,
might need to do if they want to continue in power after that. Maybe they want to get what they're doing done and they don't mind, but
yeah,
it's got to give them something to think about.
Maybe they won't think about anything.
Also in the news, of course, markets continue to tumble around the world in the wake of Donald Trump's latest round of tariffs against pretty much everybody in the world, announced on last Wednesday on April 2nd. Trump continues to double down on this policy, and we'll see where it all goes. Of course, it's important to note that stock markets aren't the economy itself, but they do somewhat indicate how people are feeling about where the economy is going.
Well, Howard Lutnick has basically rationalized why they said the penguins couldn't do trade, or they had that. There's these islands that only have penguins and seals. And I'm actually on my tablet, got the news feed here. Is that on those Sunday talk shows, the political Face the Nation, et cetera? Harold Lutnick, Secretary of Commerce, said, well, we had to do that because of loopholes. They could have, the Australians could have went to the Penguin Island and traded with, and so it closed the loophole. He doesn't want to admit it was kind of an error.
Some people are speculating that they made up the whole trade policy using an AI bot, like ChatGPT. I don't know if that's true or not, but it's certainly the chatter online.
Well, he's covering himself up. In fact, before Harold Lutnick became Secretary of Commerce, you go, all the senators kind of ask them questions and so on. And he, about like a month ago, said, oh, he's just doing these tariff threats about fentanyl, and that he supposedly understood that, you know, that the car parts had to have free movement and all that. Well, I think he, I don't know what, the guy is kind of, he's just, maybe he's going against his better judgment at this point.
Well, I think that's the thing that's got a lot of people worried, is nobody's quite sure what Trump is hoping, what's behind his thinking here. Does he just confused? Does he not know? Is there some strategy? Is it just a bunch of BS?
Who knows? The thing about Harold Lutnick is not pushing back. Because when I looked, there's about I didn't see all 3 hours. I just saw one little clip, and the senator was concerned. I said, well, you know that this is way before they were implemented or whatever. Yeah. And he sort of, if you hear it, Harold Lutnick made it like, oh, no, well, I understand that about car parts. Well, he supposedly does understand that about car parts now. You know, so it's almost like they're thinking, well, maybe he's right about something. Like Glenn Beck says, give him a chance. Yeah, give him a chance. we'll give Adolf Hitler a chance to take over the world.
Exactly. It's like, I mean, at the very least, he ought to be able to clearly articulate
what he's
doing. And he jumps all over the map every other day and every week.
Is this Harold Lutnick you speak of,
well,
sir?
Well, I mean, Harold Lutnick, because it's Trump who's obviously, you know, running the show, and all his people need to try and just back up and support whatever he's saying. They don't actually push back against him.
Yeah.
I mean, that becomes obvious. Anyway, we got to get on with the show, otherwise we're not going to have time for all the bits we have. This is a report about a bookstore and a new publisher down in New Westminster.
Groovecap Books and Records is a community-used book and record shop in New Westminster, B.C., operated and owned by husband and wife duo John and Kathy Hughes, this bookstore has a bi-weekly book club, author talks, and musical sessions by local artists. One of Groovecat's stated goals is to foster community connection through stories and music. Their next venture to achieve this? Their very own publishing company. In late last year, December 2024, Groovecap Books and Records launched Cosmic Cranium, an independent publishing press which John Hughes has already used to launch his very own book, Dream Punk, A Nightscape. To find out more about Cosmic Cranium, CJSF took a trip down to Groovecap Books and Records, where we immediately found ourselves surrounded by used books, pieces of art, records, and the sounds of light jazz playing on vinyl. When we finally sat down with John Hughes, we asked him to provide an explanation for why Cosmic Cranium Publishing was launched in the first place?
So I was a sessional instructor for a couple of different post-secondary institutions, and I one morning woke up and was cursing at my computer at about 5:30 in the morning, and my wife said to me, "Is this really what you want to do with 15 years in university?" And I responded that no, it wasn't, and her suggestion was, well, let's do something a little more rewarding. So we picked a bookstore. And that went over pretty well in the community. So Groove Cat Books and Records, part of what we aim to do is make things groovier. If you've seen this town, there's not enough soul or groove going on here. There's a lot of concrete, steel condos, high-end dentist offices, and, you know, here's sort of upscale gyms in the ground floor and very little in the way of cultural representation. So we wanted to make things at least stick our noses in the area where we thought we could sort of contribute culturally. That's how Groove Cat Books and Records was born. I had a book that I'd been working on since my days at SFU in the School of Communication there, which had to do with my research on dreams. I had a bunch of almosts in publication. One guy actually suggested that he would pick it up, a guy in Columbus, Ohio, but also wanted me to pay for half of the publication costs. So I thought, okay, you know what? We've got Groove Cat Books and Records. Why not start a publication company? And hence, Cosmic Cranium Press was born.
We also asked Hughes if there were any other books in the works that Cosmic Cranium plans on publishing. Here's what he had to say to that.
Canada is not the 51st effing state, and it is going to be a collection of essays by everyday Canadians on not only that the fact remains Canada will never be the 51st state, but the reasons why people see it this way from personal perspective. And I've reached out in a lot of different directions, and we've got incredible response from veterans, from Indigenous writers, from LGBTQ authors, from doctors, farmers, people who do all sorts of jobs across this country. And these are the essays that are just starting to come in now. The deadline's still open, so if people are interested, hit us up at CosmicCraniumPress.com and look for submissions. And, you know, I mean, if you've got a great idea and the deadline's a little short, we can probably work with you on that. But it's definitely a counterpunch to Donald Trump's ridiculous idea of the 51st state. So we've seen the political response. This is a cultural counterpunch, shall we say.
Afterwards, we asked him to expand on some of the other types of books that he hopes Cosmic Cranium is able to publish.
So that's kind of the spirit of what we do at Cosmic Cranium Press. If there's a problem we don't know about yet, and we should be aware of, and there's ways that people can tackle it head on as individuals or as a community without deference to elites or really anybody who proclaims himself to be, you know, an expert in the field and isn't willing to work with people, then that's something that we would definitely look at. Also, stuff that is, you know, if there's a cultural or political horizon that is about to erupt, then people can research and write about that in a credible fashion. When I say credible, don't get your sources from internet conspiracy stuff. We're not interested at all. Research, you know, on the ground, talking to people, backed up by scholarly research at the same time. This is the kind of stuff that we're looking for. Or if your book just is a real out of left field complete dazzler that, you know, the writing is just so sparkling that we can't say no to, these are the kind of books that we're also interested in.
At the end of the interview, John Hughes left us with some advice that he has for anyone interested in owning their own bookstore or publishing company.
If you open a used bookstore, get a cat. We just lost ours, which is very sad. We will at some point get another, but it's a little raw right now. But get a cat in your bookstore. Very, very key. Connect with your community. Listen to people. Have local authors come in. Have local artists come in. Invite musicians, poets, anybody who wants to be part of the community. When people come in who are interested to hang out and look around, don't worry if they don't buy a book that day, or really ever. It's about community, okay? It's nice to keep the lights on, so if you can afford to buy a book, please do. If you can't, don't sweat it. From the publishing side of things, play your hunches. Go with your heart, but be smart about it, and work your connections. It's really all I have to say about that.
Once again, you were just listening to our conversation with John Hughes, one of the owners of Groovecat Books and Records, as well as Cosmic Cranium Press in New Westminster, BC. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. This segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative.
And thanks to Danny for that report. Joining us in the studio right here at CJSF is Akira Ayatel, and you're a curator with the upcoming Skoden Indigenous Film Festival.
Yes, thank you for
Skoden
having
the
me.
Proper pronunciation?
Yes, Skoden. Okay. So Skoden, it kind of comes from, it originally means like, let's go then.
Yeah.
So Skoden, it's all about just honoring Indigenous peoples, and it was founded based on the principles of reconciliation. Originally, it was founded by one of the main curators, Carr Sapier. They're a Two-Spirit Wolastoqi filmmaker. They co-created the festival with Grace Matheson here at SFU. And now it's our seventh year. I'm honored to have been a part of it since 2021. First I was in the class, then the intern, a jury member, and yeah.
And you're still a student, but you've sort of been involved in sort of moving your way into more important and responsible roles with the festival.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what's the festival about?
So this year we have two programs. We have a shorts program. It's family friendly. It's called Kinship. Yeah. And all of the programs just embody the feeling of community and connection and just hoping to share these teachings with the next generation. And then we have our feature presentation. It's a short program. We have one short film with Amanda Strong.
Yeah.
It's called Inquo, for When the Starving Return. And then we have Jules Kustachin's new film, Nimisisak, sorry, my mispronunciation, Nimisak, Sisters in Film. And then we're also going to have a few Q&As. And we really just want to celebrate Indigenous filmmakers here in Canada and just pass it on to the next generation. And yeah.
So with this film festival, people can apply to be part of it. So what's sort of the scope of the draw for participation?
So previously we had it as a course at the School for Contemporary Arts.
Yeah.
Moving forward, it is a bit up in the air.
Yeah.
Hope we're trying to figure out the next year, but we are always wanting everyone to be a part of it. Skoden is for everyone. Every year that we've had both Indigenous and non-Indigenous people a part of it, we've had students from every faculty almost. They've been putting it on every year. But this year we've had to shift it around with just all the changes at SFU. And so it's me, Akira, and then we have Kathleen Mullen, and then Carr Sapier, and then our Skoden committee putting it on.
You three are the curators?
Yeah.
So it's not just students who can apply to be part of it?
We do have like the Skoden committee who are all like are just our pretty much our family at the faculty for what's it, communication, arts and technology. They work their butts off every year to get Skoden to be where it is, and hopefully we can figure out the next coming years. We're really proud of Skoden, and it's really just about like bringing both Indigenous and non-Indigenous people together. And this year we're also partnering with the First Nations, Métis and Inuit Student Association. They're having their third annual Honoring Indigenous Students Powwow on April 12th, the day after ours. And yeah, we just wanted to build more connections across campuses and bring more people together.
Great. So this is happening this Friday, and it's a free festival.
Yes.
And it's happening at the Gordon and Leslie Diamond Center, and that's a theater right beside this building, is it not?
Yes, it is.
Right. So if you're listening at home, that's up here on the SFU campus, right in the middle of the campus near where you drive up. So if you're coming up here, it shouldn't be hard to find. What's the timing on Friday evening for the program?
Our doors will open at 5 p.m. and then the first program will start at 5:30. So in between that time, definitely recommend to come at 5. We're going to have some Indigenous vendors. There'll be some SFU students who are vending their Indigenous-made products. And then there'll also be some refreshments. And then we'll have our second program, the feature program, at 7:15 p.m. There'll be two Q&As, one with Dr. Lyanna Patrick. She's one of the filmmakers, a part of the shorts program. And then we'll have another Q&A with Jules Kustachin, who's a part of the feature program.
Right. So if people aren't able to make it up here by 5, they can still come up and join at 7:30?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Throughout the program?
Yeah, for sure. They can come 7:30. Honestly, I'm sure the doors will be open. And we always love people just coming in anytime. Yeah. They're also going to be available online for the weekend of... once the festival ends on the 11th, they'll be put online and they'll be up on our website until Sunday night, I believe, or Monday night, April 13th, I think.
Okay. Yeah. And how do people find that online?
They'll have to go to our Eventbrite. So check out our Skodan website and then there's a link to RSVP. And once they sign up for the Eventbrite, they'll also get a link to the films.
Great. So they can just sort of Google the Skodan Festival.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's Skodan, S-K-O-D-E-N. I think if you Google that, you should it should come up in your top results and you can find out all the details. They do ask you to RSVP so they know how many are coming. Mm-hmm. But once again, the event is free. So once you've booked your spot, you're welcome to come. Can you get, just very quickly before we finish up, just tell us a bit about the films again?
Yeah, so we have the shorts program. It's called Kinship, and I believe we have about eight short films. They're all range from animated to live action, a couple documentaries. There's one film called Powwow Experience that we wanted to include in honor of the SFU Powwow. And then we have our feature presentation, Amanda Strong's amazing stop motion animated film. It is called Inquo for When the Starving Return. And then Jules Kustachin's documentary, Nimissak, Sisters in Film. It's an amazing documentary about Indigenous female filmmakers in the industry. And it also honors the iconic Alanis Obomsawin. Mm-hmm. I think everything is just such... They all share these amazing stories that everyone should come out and watch.
Excellent. Well, it sounds like a fabulous program. Once again, this Friday evening at the Leslie and Gordon Diamond Family Auditorium up here on the SFU Burnaby campus. Program starts at 5 p.m. and runs till 9:30. First with the shorts program, then the features program, plus speakers. Sounds like a fabulous program. Thanks so much for coming up to tell us about it today, Akira.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Akira Ayatale of the Skodan Indigenous Film Festival. Sounds like a great program. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Do you want to know about up-and-coming artists, albums, and more? Well, I have the perfect show for you. Come hang out with me at Raccoon City every Tuesday from 12 to 1. Hope to see you there.
And next up we have Mayor Ken Sims talking about the federal election. Here at CJSF, we're doing a series of talking to regional mayors about what their concerns and what their hopes are from this federal election and what issues are most important for their communities. Jesse Wensloff talked to Mayor Ken Sim last week, and we'll be bringing you more mayors between now and the election.
I
Ahead of April 28th's federal election, CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby is presenting a series of interviews with the mayors of the municipalities within British Columbia's Lower Mainland, giving them each a chance to share with our listeners what they see as the most important issues for residents of their cities, what they'd like to see from members of parliament elected within their municipality, and why this election is particularly important to their constituents. I'm Jesse Wensloff, and I met with Vancouver Mayor Ken Sim for the first of these interviews.
Yeah, sure. My name is Ken Sim, and I'm the current mayor of the city of Vancouver.
Thanks for joining me, Ken. Obviously, as you know, as our listeners know, there is a federal election coming up April 28th, and I want to know from you what you think, as the mayor of Vancouver, what you think are the most important issues for residents of Vancouver in this upcoming election.
Yeah, and I want to preface any of, comments that I have with the fact that as mayor of Vancouver, I have a fiduciary duty to make sure that we do not pick sides. We are not endorsing any one party, and we will be more than excited to work with whoever forms government in Ottawa, and we will be great partners with them. So if anyone construes this as an attack or an endorsement on any one party, very far from it. We are going to talk about, you know, data, items, whatever, and what's important to Vancouver. Oh, okay. So in a nutshell, there are a ton of things that we can use support on from the federal government. We've been pretty clear on the public safety and mental health side of things. There are a lot of things, a lot of challenges that we experience in the city of Vancouver. And the city of Vancouver is a metaphor for other cities, you know, medium and large cities across the country, because we're all dealing with the same issues. And so, the two big things, well, there's probably five, but the two big things when it comes to the mental health side of things is developing an integrated approach towards homelessness, mental health, and addictions. We can't look at this in a silo, and a lot of the times the city of Vancouver does not have the jurisdiction and or the resources to deal with this. We're looking for bail reform on repeat offenders, because, you know, we do have a lot of a lot of the challenges we see on our streets are, created by, a handful of individuals who, repeatedly have interactions with law enforcement. Sometimes, hundreds, like 400, 500, 600, 700 interactions. And at some point we need to identify this is a healthcare issue and treat it as such. Or the person could be just a jerk, and we should, I think we owe it to society to make sure that we don't have catch and release, and, we deal with it accordingly. The third thing is we need to secure our ports. Our ports aren't policed right now. And so it's, we have illegal drugs and weapons coming in, and we have cars and other illegally acquired goods going out. And so that serves as a root cause problem for a lot of the challenges we see on the street. And then finally, on the housing side, with our SROs, our single room occupancy rooms that, vulnerable populations live in, a lot of this stock is just falling apart. They're not livable. And we do need the federal government to step up and help us with funding, because the city of Vancouver, we don't have the financial resources to repair all these things. And finally, and this is a big general comment for the broader community, infrastructure. So as we know, we have housing attainability challenges throughout this country, including Vancouver, and we can do our part as a city to make it easier for home builders to build homes in the city of Vancouver, except for when it comes to the infrastructure, the plumbing. We have a $500 million a year deficit, and we can't fund that. And that will stop us from being able to build more homes faster. And so we need the federal government to help us fund these big capital investments.
With all of these issues, they are issues that get brought up at every level of politics, right? Municipal, provincial, and federal. And there's always a certain amount of
whose jurisdiction is it? How can we work together? Whose responsibility is this? How can the federal government do a better job of managing that process, in your opinion?
Well, there are some places where it's clearly federal jurisdiction. If we could, change the criminal code so there's, bail reform, we'd do it in a second. We don't want to ask the federal government, but we don't have jurisdiction over that. So though that's pretty clear, once again, and then...